The apartment was in the four-unit block he managed on the property along with the kennels. Debbie took the job and the apartment. Mr. Allen Bono was a very nice man, said Debbie. He was 39 years old, had spent the last 17 years in Australia. His stories were fascinating. And he'd been back in America for about a year and was managing the property for his brother-in-law. But he didn't know anything about the kennel work. In fact, he hated animals. He begged me to take the job, but at first I told him no because the kennel runs were filthy and the animals weren't being treated properly. But then he called me back again. This time offered the apartment. Giving the constant war going on with Carl, Junior, I took the job so that Arnie and I could get out of the house and start our life together. So in late November, Arnie, Debbie, and Jason moved to the Route 7 apartment. Arnie continued to work full-time as a tree surgeon while Debbie managed the kennels for Allen Bono. With two incomes and no rent to pay, they could save their money, and they were planning to get married in the spring. But there would be no spring. There would be no marriage. With the move to the new apartment, the stage was now set for disaster. Arnie was now installed at the scene of the crime. Allen Bono would be the victim. In the Glatzel house, activity had calmed down by December. Yet the beast remained present in its array of 43 forms. They knew it was there because it still talked to David, telling him future events which he passed on to the family. By the onset of the winter, the entity was simply a lurking presence. What is the beast doing today, David? Judy would ask. He's just waiting, he says. David would reply. Waiting for what? She'd ask. He won't tell me, David always answered. The fact that the entity remained is the telling link between the summer possession case and the February murder. That which remained had the potential to possess again, and it did. The victim, though, was not David, nor was it young Carl. The victim was Arnie Johnson. Now, Arnie Johnson's in prison, sentenced until 2001 A.D. I received a call the other night telling me he was listening in prison that night in Connecticut. It's the strangest murder case on record. His defense, the demon did it, while the victim was at least 10 to 15 or 20 feet from him. The judge obviously didn't believe that. Translated his plea into insanity, then denied it because a technical paper requesting the insanity plea had not been filed. And he was sentenced, found guilty and sentenced on circumstantial evidence. We'll see what those present at the killing have to say. During the summer, Arnie had experienced two flagrant possession seizures, the second of which was a humiliating scene in church. On November 4th, Arnie came under possession a third time. Arnie and Debbie had gone to the rental house in Newtown to check on Mrs. Johnson and the girls, hopefully to repair relations. However, when they got to the house, they discovered it was vacant, as she and the girls had fled 2 weeks earlier. Both Arnie and Debbie were glad to see she was gone. Debbie refused to stay in the house and immediately went outside, where she ran into the landlord's daughter and friend. A minute later, when Arnie walked out of the house, he was possessed. It happened suddenly and unexpectedly. The minute he shut the door and put his feet on the front step. First, Arnie's body trembled violently all over, said Debbie. Then the whole appearance of his face changed into the same hating sneer that we saw in David all summer. What stood there was not Arnie. What stood there was the beast again, like the master of the house. I almost fainted. First, Arnie's body trembled violently all over, said Debbie. Then the whole appearance of his face changed into the same hating sneer that we saw in David all summer. What stood there was not Arnie. What stood there was the beast. Again, like the master of the house. I almost fainted. It reminded me of all the hell and torment I thought I'd suppressed in my mind. The whole thing lasted less than a minute. But it proved this spirit hadn't left at all, that it could possess any of us. It was 2 months before Arnie was possessed a fourth time, in the middle of January. This time, Debbie was the only witness. Now, you don't think I'm crazy for staying with demonology, do you? The entity possessed Arnie as fully and completely as it had the other three times. As with the other previous incidents, there was no talking or communication. That which seized Arnie was preoccupied with rage. For the long 5 minutes that the possession lasted, it virtually ignored Debbie, but angrily punched a hole through a thick wooden chest before withdrawing. Not even a karate expert could do what he did, noted Debbie. The next morning, there wasn't even a mark on Arnie's hand. It was the final two possessions of Arnie that led to catastrophe. They took place within 10 minutes of each other. They were both fierce attempts at murder. The sixth and last episode of possession resulted in death. There was no intent or premeditation on Arnie Johnson's part to harm anyone. His body was simply seized and used as an instrument to kill. The victim was his friend. Why the murder occurred precisely on February 16th was not known at the time. But the date was not random. A death was bound to occur on that day. The victim was irrelevant. For what was sought by the possessing entity was a human soul. In fact, the intended victim was Debbie Glatzel. But Alan Bono was killed instead. Am I boring you? The reason why the entity chose to work through Arnie Johnson was the culminating iniquity. The burden of murder was imposed on him in direct retribution for his challenges to the beast at the time it possessed David Glatzel. In the end, what took place was not just murder. It was a diabolical execution. The night before the killing occurred, Arnie and Debbie drove to Bridgeport and picked up Wanda, Janice, and little Mary, Arnie's sisters, It was Sunday night. The next day, the next day, it was the next day, not the same day. No, it was the very next day. What is that? You learn quick. It was Sunday night. The next day, George Washington's birthday was a holiday in Connecticut. And the girls had no school, so they were going to stay overnight with Arnie and Debbie. I don't have to read to you. I can just sit here and read it to myself. Interesting. Relations between Arnie and Debbie and the Johnsons had promptly returned to normal when Mary moved out of the rental house. That's where all the trouble started, the waterbed, remember? On Monday, February 16th, 1981, Arnie Johnson got up at 7 o'clock as usual. He had to be at work by 8. Aren't you glad you lived long enough to find that out? He had to be at work at 8. However, for the first time in a long while, he felt ill. He had a throbbing headache, an upset stomach, and a chest condition, congestion. He simply couldn't function. He couldn't function, and at 7:15 a.m. he called in sick. Debbie gave him 2 aspirin and an antibiotic, tetracycline, inaccurately identified later by authorities as My Town. And he returned to bed. With the chatter and the commotion, you want me to hurry, don't you? It's too exciting. With the chatter and commotion caused by his little sisters, however, Arnie couldn't sleep, and he got up for the day shortly after 10. He felt considerably better at that point, but he wasn't well. Meanwhile, the kennels were open for business that day, and Debbie had a number of grooming assignments, and the girls were eager to watch. Debbie introduced the 3 girls to Alan Bono, who later invited the entire group, including Arnie, out to lunch. Alan wasn't married, ate in restaurants almost all the time, Debbie remembers. He liked to take people out and buy them lunch just to have company. He was lonely and melancholy, too. He talked about death every day. Arnie and I made friends with him just so that he would have friends, but he was a very heavy drinker, an alcoholic. His drinking impaired any ability he might have had to run the kennels, which he hated. The animals were completely ignored. Expensively boarded pets got no food or water, even no heat. Some died. By 11 o'clock the morning of the murder, Alan was already half-cropped on white wine. At lunchtime, Alan took us out to a nearby restaurant where we all had hamburgers and Coke, except Alan, who put away a couple of carafes of wine. Alan insisted we drink wine with him. Arnie didn't want to, but we each drank about a glassful. Alan kept topping them up until we let the wine glasses set full. After lunch, we stopped at a pet supply store and got shampoo and other supplies for the dogs I had to groom that afternoon. When we were there, it was odd, but a big parrot climbed onto Arnie's shoulder and sat there all the time we were in the place. Wouldn't get off, pecked at people who came too near him. On the way back, we made a stop at the liquor store so Alan could buy a big bottle of red wine to work on before dinner. Too cold. When we returned, Arnie went up to the apartment for a short nap. I brought the girls to the grooming parlor. And Alan went to work on the wine in the downstairs office. It was when we came back to the kennels after lunch that I began to think something was wrong and that something tragic was going to happen. By 4 p.m., that sense of impending tragedy was equally as strong in Judy Glatzel. She wasn't there. She began calling the kennels every half hour, demanding that Debbie and Arnie get away from the kennels and return to the Glatzels' house immediately. Debbie sensed what her mother was talking about and promised to bring Arnie and the girls over to the house for dinner at 6. By 5 that afternoon, Arnie was up and feeling better. It had turned into a fine day. Arnie joined Alan Bono in the ground floor kennel office and was asked if he could fix the speaker wiring in the man's stereo. Arnie set about the task while Debbie and the girls were grooming in the back. The poodle was finished, and the grooming parlor was cleaned up by 5:30 p.m. when Judy called again. The instructions were straightforward. Get the hell home. I told her that something was terribly, terribly wrong, Judy recalled. I knew there was going to be a tragedy, and if we were together, maybe it could be prevented. But by now, Alan Bono was fully inebriated. At the time of death, his alcohol intake registered 3 times the legal limit of 3.3 on a 1.0 scale. Alan insisted that they stay and have dinner with him. Debbie resisted, but he created such an obnoxious scene that she capitulated and finally ordered 3 pizzas. Shortly before 6, Debbie and the 3 girls went out to pick up the pizzas. Arnie, meanwhile, went up to the apartment to check on George, their sheepdog, and to change out of his work boots and into shoes. Curiously, the shoes that Arnie put on belonged to David. It was 6 o'clock when Debbie and Arnie's sisters returned with the unwanted pizzas. They found Arnie in the kennel office with Alan Bono, who was still drinking wine. The stereo had been fixed, and he seemed pleased. I suggested that we have the pizzas up in Alan's apartment, Debbie recalled. I'd seen it before, and I knew Alan was going to get drunker and fall asleep, and I wanted him to pass out in his apartment, not ours. So I went upstairs, set out the pizzas on his kitchen table, and called everybody when it was ready. Alan came up last. He brought his wine with him. He also turned the stereo up real loud. It wasn't very pleasant. Alan Bono was so drunk that he could barely walk, and he was distinctly not interested in eating. As soon as the others sat down, Alan turned on the television set, even though the stereo was blaring rock music downstairs, but the television wouldn't work. And Alan began shaking the set and yelling at it. Debbie told him to settle down, but Alan was obvious. He began to bang on the wall so violently with his fist that he put a hole in the plasterboard. Although no one at the table had taken more than one bite of pizza, Arnie and Debbie stood up and told the girls they were to leave immediately. Neither Arnie nor I wanted the girls to be in the presence of this drunken, violent man, said Debbie. And we both felt it would be best if we got in the car and went directly to my parents' house. We were certainly not going to stay in the middle of that ugly spectacle. Arnie led the way down the stairs with Debbie right behind him. At the bottom of the stairs was the door to the kennel office. Arnie darted in to turn off the blaring stereo. When Arnie emerged from the office, Debbie was holding open the front door. But the girls did not follow. Upstairs, Alan Bono, drunk, was blocking their way. It was at this moment that the 5th possession of Arnie occurred. Arnie walked past me as I held open the door for the girls, and then he stopped about 2 feet away, Debbie recalled. I had just yelled for the girls to come downstairs. Then I turned to get Arnie's reaction. When I saw him, I shouted, "Oh, no!" It wasn't Arnie standing there. It was the beast in him. The eyes, the mouth, everything was changed. The next thing I heard was a terrible, loud growl come out of Arnie. Seconds later. Now, we're a little out of practice. Let's try it again. The next thing I heard was a terrible, loud growl. Come out of Arnie. Seconds later. I turned to get Arnie's reaction. When I saw him, I shouted, "Oh, no. It wasn't Arnie standing there. The beast was in him. The eyes, the mouth, everything was changed. The next thing I heard was a terrible, loud growl come out of Arnie. Seconds later. Then I turned to get Arnie's reaction. I just want to see if I've lost the ability to squeeze things. When I saw him, I shout. I don't ever want to lose the ability to squeeze things. Then I turned to get Arnie's reaction. When I saw him, I shouted, "Oh, no. It wasn't Arnie standing there. The beast was in him. The eyes, the mouth, everything was changed. The next thing I heard was a terrible, loud growl come out of Arnie. Seconds later. Now, what we want to know is what happened seconds later after the growl. They're not really in it tonight, Jerry. Let's squeeze them a little more. Then I turned to get Arnie's reaction. When I saw him, I shouted, "That's getting better. Let's do it again." Then I turned to get Arnie's reaction. When I saw him, I shouted,
"Oh, no!"
It wasn't Arnie standing there. The beast was in him. The eyes, the mouth, everything was changed. The next thing I heard was a terrible, loud growl come out of Arnie. Are you Arnie? Seconds later. Now, later is later and not now, so we'll wait a few seconds to see if you want me to continue. We've got to get back in the habit of squeezing things. What I said,